And then last Friday, we did some recapitulation. So we will move forward today. We saw that the Bhagavad Gita, it is science and technology both. It brings us the clear understanding of the absolute truth, clear understanding of what we are and what the world is. And it doesn't stop there, shows us the way to actually experience it. It is not, therefore, a philosophy in the sense of just intellectual thinking. It is much more than that. It, of course, logically presents all these ideas, does everything to convince us, but knows that just intellectual conviction is not actual achievement. So it moves then to give a practical procedure to bring that truth right into our actual awareness, our actual experience. And it was shown that one has to give up this idea of doership and keep on doing the works. One gets attached, entangled, and thus keeps on suffering in this world. We get bound because of this. We consider that, I am the worker. And then, because I am the worker, I seek the results of that work. Now, those results then become a bondage for me. And then, it proceeds further. I am feeling some disturbance in the sound system. It is, if it is not, then we will, is it okay now? Excellent, okay. So, this idea that I am doer makes us bound. Because I am the subject, the world is the object. This line of division comes there. And this being not the truth, all my actions are based on this fundamental error. And thus they tend to bind me. But when I perform these very actions with the knowledge that I am not the doer, then this becomes then a sacrifice. Then these actions get based on knowledge. Now this is a step-by-step gradual procedure. One may not be able to achieve it immediately, but we can start at whatever place we are. At a starting point in our awareness, we can start the practice. Like one goes on climbing the staircase step by step. It may be very high building, but gradually, slowly one can climb and reach the top. If we try to climb, say, in one step the whole distance, we will not be able to do that. And if we just look at the towards the top, we may feel that it is just an impossibility. How can one ever get there? And that sense of impossibility very often brings the sense that so let us not bother about it. Many times the highest truths, we feel them. They beckon us. They inspire us. But we are then bogged down by the practical difficulties in achieving it. That yes, I read about that in Bhagavad Gita. Sounds wonderful. It makes sense. Like once one of the attendees in this class, she told me that, well, it makes sense. But what is the use? It doesn't tally with my experience. I am fully convinced in the class that every word is correct. That is how it should be. But then my life just goes in the same way. So what is the use of all this? Yes, friends, if we do not start climbing on this path slowly, slowly, and then it is like that. It won't make any difference to our life. But it is possible to realize this truth. It is possible to experience this, provided we follow the procedure. Everywhere you have to follow the procedure. Following proper procedure, we get to the goal that we had intellectually understood. And this process is called sacrifice or yajna. Yajna is gradually sacrificing our ignorance and all that is based on ignorance. This fundamental idea must be quite clear to everyone that having knowledge requires giving up of ignorance. We cannot be hanging on to ignorance if we want knowledge. In fact, getting rid of ignorance is just another name of getting knowledge. It is so just renunciation, giving up. And this giving up happens step by step in life. So a person starts working slowly in this spirit that my hands, feet, legs, all my body is just an instrument. It is working. I am not doing anything. Like a person sitting in the plane feels that, well, I am flying. Are you flying? You are just sitting there. It is the aircraft that is flying. You are just sitting there. So you are not really doing any work. It is not that you feel exhausted after taking such a long flight because you were flying. Because you got bored and so forth, you may feel exhaustion. But otherwise, you didn't do any work there. It is the plane was going on. So see that this body is a vehicle like that. It is running. It is doing all the actions. The hands, feet and all that, that is doing action. And what kind of actions are happening? We say that we are working. Means what is happening? Things in one place go to things in another place. They just change the place. And we say it is working. Like a building is constructed. Means what? Somewhere there were bricks, or say even making the bricks, somewhere there was soil, that soil or earth was collected and made into pieces. So just the transformation in material is going on. Something was in one place, kept in another place, and then that is work. So our work is like that. It is just shifting the place. Making different permutation combinations, like you have cotton, that very cotton is stretched and becomes yarn, threads means yarn, then those threads get into, you know, woven together, that very thing you call cloth. Then it is cut and sewed together some pieces and you call it a pant or a shirt or whatever. Now it is just cotton and transformed in different ways. It is just that. So our actions are all like that. It is nothing more than that. It is therefore just a physical or mental connection. It is things are changing their places, changing their combinations. When combination means again the same thing, certain atoms were with certain other atoms, they got together and you got something different. Like there was hydrogen and there was oxygen, and those got combined together, and then you started calling it water. So it is, they just shift the place, change the combinations, and thus you see the things happening in the world. So this is all one starts seeing as a play. I am not doing any work. It is you acquire a sense of detachment. So we saw that in the 21st verse that this nirashi yata cittatma tyakta sarva parigraha shariram kevalam karma kurvan napnoti kilbisham, bereft of desire, controlled in mind and body, with all positions relinquished and doing merely bodily action, he or she does not get tainted. Well, nothing is happening to me. It is the body, the mind, the all these things around. They are changing their places. And they are moving from here to there. It didn't make any difference in me or to me. So, when you see things in that light, then they cease to bind you. And what is the result of that? The next verse describes that such a person therefore won't seek anything. Whatever comes, that person is satisfied with it. The 22nd verse, yadricha labha santushto dvandvatito vimatsaraha samasiddhavasiddhaucha kritvapi na nibadhyate. Contented with what chance brings, transcending the pair of opposites, free from jealousy and unperturbed in success and failure, he is not bound even though performing actions. That person is not bothered that what is whether I become successful or I fail. Because my action is only a part of the whole process. It is a whole universal design. It is now my idea of success may not be really in the divine plan. So I work. Sometimes the success comes, but sometimes failure is a success. Because failure imparts a lesson, a teaching. And therefore, the failure also, from a higher standpoint, is success. Because failures usually are greater teachers than successes. So, failures also is seen as a learning experience. And this person remains unperturbed. Friends, this happens actually. I have seen many people like that through such spiritual disciplines. Many times, some of these big, in the worldly sense, very big successes come in their endeavors. But they remain just unperturbed, do not say, hey, and all that. It is not required. They just remain the same. Or even if the failure comes, they had put in hard work, continuously hard work has been put in, but didn't bring success, that doesn't erase the smile on their faces. It is all, they take it as all divine will. So whatever comes, that is fine with them. Whatever God brings, excellent. That is what is for me. They do not seek more, or are not dissatisfied if they get less. Or even if a lot more comes, they do not feel any elation. They see that it doesn't make any difference. It is, things are changing their places. At one place you sometimes see a big heap. I do not get anything by that. It is, sometimes there is a shallow somewhere. That also doesn't affect me. Why should I identify with somewhere a tall heap or somewhere a shallow? I do not get bothered by any of these. That is the attitude of this person. So, whether success or failure, this person remains completely unperturbed, calm, peaceful. And that is what really we seek, is it not? Peace in life. And we all seek peace in life. But it gets disturbed all the time. When we get tremendous success, or sometimes even a silly little success, we get so elated, peace is gone, you know. Peace goes away. And we know that example just a few years back, that after many, many years, that Red Sox won the World Series. And what happened? Because they won, the cars and all, they were smashed, you see. And the fans went and smashed the cars. Why? Because they won. When they lose, then also the cars get smashed. The thing is, the reason is that these elations and depressions cannot be, they affect us so much. Success or failure affects one so much. It is many times people come and say, oh, nothing is going my way, it is a bad day. Or sometimes say, wow, it is, I am going to celebrate today. What is happening? What happened? Something, a little bit success came in some endeavor. So it is not the attitude of this person. Whatever comes, fine. Whether it comes, it is okay. If it doesn't come, that still is okay. Doesn't get bothered by these. And this is a great achievement, friends. When one gets to this stage, then this person is always peaceful and derives happiness from within. It is something that when you get it, you know that it is a true success in life. It is here that the success gets counted by the wise person. How much ignorance I have discarded. So that is the measure of success. Not how much money I have got, but how much ignorance I have shedded away. That is the measure of success for this person. And that much peace you get. The cause of all disturbance and worries and all that, it always happens. You want success. Now you get some success. Again there is a fear. This may go away. Again I may fail. Somebody will come and defeat me. And all that. It is again the mind is continuously perturbed. So therefore this person is unperturbed. Whatever comes, fine. Not that this person is lazy, please don't think. This person is a very active person. It is not that this person just goes and lies down. Whatever needs to be done, that person does, but with equanimity. So this equanimity is a special characteristic of this person of knowledge. So it is said, dvandvatitah, that transcending the pair of opposites. There is no conflict in this person. The clarity is there, a complete clarity about what is the purpose of life and what is the path to that perfection that we seek. So, the purpose is clear. For most of us, this is itself a problem. What do you want to do with your life? So many ideas keep on crowding in the mind. Oh, I want to do this. I want to learn music. After half an hour, another idea comes to mind. I want to learn cooking. Then after a while comes, I want to become a scientist. Then comes the thought, all this depends on earning lot of money. Let me get lot of money. Then you start feeling some headache or something. Let me have good health first. So all these things keep on crowding all the time. Which is our goal? What is the purpose? We cannot decide. We are kind of torn in so many different these things. It is like the if the four wheels of the car start going in four different directions, we are getting pulled in various directions. So this person has no such problem. He is focused, knows that the purpose of life is to know oneself, the truth that this whole universe is just that a congealed oneness. When you see that, everything is achieved. This person is therefore very clear about it. And when you are clear about the purpose, then your actions also become quite focused. That this is what I want to achieve. Other things then stop bothering you. Like a person who wants to complete, a student for example, wants to complete the study of one chapter that is given as homework or has a test on that. So, keeps concentration all the time. Doesn't bother whether I am eating or not today. Forget about it. What kind of clothing I have put, whether my clothes are nice or not, doesn't care about it. Because the purpose, other things now don't matter. This is the purpose, and so everything is focused on that. So, similarly, this person is focused on the goal. Therefore, no conflict. Whether you get money, you don't get money, this person is not worried about that. Whether you look nice or you don't look nice in the eyes of the people, this person is not worried about that. Whether people appreciate you or don't appreciate you, this person doesn't care a fig about that. Because the goal is clear and path also is clear. So how peaceful this person must be feeling, see. It is, just imagine, a very ordinary example to convince this, that when you know where you want to go, if you are in a car, and you know where you want to go, and you know the route exactly, you know all the directions, everything is quite clear before you, you know you have a good vehicle to go on, and then you feel a sense of peace and security. If not, then you are worried, if I go on the wrong path, if I do not find the road, and so forth. So, this person therefore is completely at peace. So, and there is no jealousy. Another thing, you know, that when we are trying to achieve success in some field, like say, I want to win a lottery ticket. That lottery I want to win. Now, there is always a million people will be buying the ticket. One will be the winner. So if one will win and remaining all 999,000, they will be losing. So they will not win. So all the achievements in the world are like that, competitive. You have to be competitive. That means if you get, somebody else will not get. If somebody else gets, you may not get. It is a tussle. So it is, we always hear these words, and we are in a competitive world. The world is always competitive, not that today it has become competitive. It has always been a competition. Because we are all after enjoyment, and the means of enjoyment are limited, the seekers are too many. So there is always a hankering, a tussle, and therefore jealousy and envy, they will be there. Oh, this fellow got that position. I wanted that. Why this fellow got it? There is that Tolstoy story that a lawyer dies. Everybody has to die someday, so this lawyer also has to die. So, and then after that, obituaries were being said, and condolence messages were being, and then Tolstoy, in his great style, gives a peep into the minds of all of them. That while they were saying all these condolences, their minds were thinking, now this fellow is gone, now this position I will get, and then I will become this and I will. So everybody was calculating on all such things. So there is this idea of jealousy, envy, and outmastering somebody is there in these worldly achievements. It is always like that. Whatever is on the personal level, you see it on the social level also. That my nation must progress. Our United States must progress. Go ahead of all other nations. Be the topmost. Do we not see the fallacy or this in that sense? That means there will be always a tussle. And that, yes, it is not that if everybody is progressing in the same way, at the same level, then there is no sense of achievement. Everywhere here, see, in the world, we want to be special. Yes, I have that which somebody, the others don't have. I have this diamond ring, and it is special. None of my neighbors can ever think of having such a nice thing. If somebody also has, my neighbor also has the same ring, then my joy goes away. But this is not like that. This self can be realized by Vishwanatha and by Triveni also, not that they have to fight it out between them. So Triveni, don't worry. If Vishwanath achieves, you will not be able to achieve. You will also be able to achieve. Doesn't matter, because it is the self of all, you know. So there is absolutely no tussle, no fighting, no competition there. So you can freely cooperate without the fear of losing. There is nobody loses. This is the achievement where everybody can be winner. Nobody needs to be loser at all. So, therefore, there is in principle complete absence of jealousy. or envy here, vimatsara. This is a special feature of spiritual practice, that there is no sense of one-upmanship there. In worldly matters, yes, there is always one-upmanship. I should be superior to the other fellow. We don't say that because we know that it is not ethically right. But it is psychologically, that is always the case, that I want to be the topmost. I should be the topmost singer. There is that idea is there, that so I will try to prove that I am superior to that other fellow. So it is this particular struggle for this self-knowledge has no such competitor. So it is free from all a sense of envy or jealousy. And so there is this always in that the person is completely, not concerned whether one gets success or one gets failure. It is not counted even as one's success or failure. Whatever was the God's wish that happened, that came true, it doesn't matter whether it tallied with my wish or not. This person is satisfied. That because God knows better than I know. It is, I wanted that position, I didn't get. This person may also strive to get a particular position. But if doesn't get, then says God knows better. What is good for me is known better to God than to me. So God thought that it is better for me not to have this, and so He did not give me. So it is better for me. So to merge one's wish in the wish of the divine, that is one aspect of this spiritual practice. And so this person, the result is the bondage is not created. Our other works, all create. They may be very minor works, but they tend to bind us. They create bondage. Even simple works create bondage. We can see, because they put seed. They put a seed of the action in us, which has the tendency to again sprout. And thus the life gets bound around so many things. So, take a simple example that I have a desire to eat ice cream. Now, I ate it. I thought it is a simple action. It should not create bondage. And why should it create bondage? It creates bondage. That sense of pleasure I got, it makes me again and again seek it. And that becomes a bondage. I ought to have it. If I don't have, my peace gets disturbed. So, I then become what? Bound by, say, ice cream or whatever other desires. That one of our friends had that habit of seeing movies. Every week he has to see two movies. Otherwise he would feel that it is all, something is not right. It didn't start like that. He went to see a movie, and then that gave a pleasant sensation. Then he went for another. Then he went for another. Now what happened? He has to go to see it. It has become a compulsion. That is how what we call the, gradually it becomes a disease. And that many such things, especially those which are harmful to one's health or the social health, when these things become habit, you cannot stop it. So they are called then compulsive behavior disorders. They become disorders, but everybody has many such compulsive behavior problems. They do not become socially disorders unless they come in a big way in conflict with the social structure. Like if you have a habit of drinking coffee. It is a compulsive behavior actually. Without drinking coffee, many people cannot start their morning meaningfully. The whole world appears to be a blurred sensation. Nothing seems to make sense until a few cups of coffee go down the throat. So it is a compulsive disorder. You have to go and get coffee. But it is not called a disorder or a disease because firstly so many people have it. So whatever is considered kind commonly occurring thing is not considered a big disorder. Or secondly, it doesn't affect people in a bad way. So I do not infringe on the rights of others by that. So it is allowed. But suppose that compulsive behavioral disorder takes the form of giving a blow. Now it is a problem. You hit a blow. In my childhood, therefore, my parents, if I gave a slap to somebody, used to warn me, "Hey, remember, your fingers will get this habit, your nerves will get into this habit, and then you will go on hitting. You will not be able to stop it. It becomes a compulsive behavioral disorder. It becomes a bondage." Is it not bondage? Bondage means what? When you are compelled to do something against your wishes, then that is called bondage. It is. Here also, these works, they make a compulsive habit in you. They make a rope for you to be tied. So you get tied by these things. And when you are getting tied, one doesn't get become aware of it. It is done so deftly that you do not become aware till you are completely enslaved. You don't feel that it is you are really bound. And when you get completely enslaved, the condition is so bad that you are automatically resigned to it and start calling it, "Okay, this is nice, this is very good, this is wonderful, this is life." So you do not even try to become free. But when you understand that this is a bondage, you struggle to get free. And this is the path, the way or the means to become free. Learn to work in a detached manner, knowing that you are an instrument. This body is an instrument. Things come and go. Successes and failures will come and go. That won't affect you at all. Swami Vivekananda worked so hard, and it appeared externally to many people that how passionately he is involved in all these works, and thought that he would be terribly in miserable condition if there are failures. But he was always having that sense of equanimity, because he, as he writes in one letter, "It is the work of the Divine Mother. Whatever she wants will happen. If she wants to bring success, she will bring it. If she doesn't bring success, it is her problem. You know, it is she will decide, who am I? It is I have no work here." One lady who wanted to suggest to Vivekananda that this work has to be done like this, then it will bring success. It is to now to all this advice, he wrote in one letter, please remember, I have no work under the sun. It is all the wish of the Divine Mother. And therefore, after doing so many works, giving some inspiring lectures, and giving a lot of scoldings also to his disciples, his scoldings used to be terrible. One will not, ordinary person will never be able to bear that tremendous scoldings. So he wouldn't give it to ordinary people, only reserved for his brother disciples, who were mentally that tough. So, it is, but after that, one would find him immersed in samadhi, in meditation. How could it happen? If an ordinary person in anger scolds somebody, see the repercussions in that person keep on reverberating all the time. So will not be able to sleep. It is not the case with Vivekananda, because he has not really done anything. It is the work does not create any bondage. And this is the condition that one reaches. It is therefore said in the next verse that gata sangasya muktasya jnana vasthita chetasah yajnaya charata karma samagram praviliyate. So gata sangasya, he who is devoid of attachment, free, whose mind is established in knowledge, and who does work as a sacrifice for the Lord, his entire action melts away. All, whatever is done, does not leave any mark on this person, does not create any bondage. It is an example given there that therefore this person's work is not really a work. It is just appearance of work. Like a rope, you know. A rope, if you try to bind with a rope to somebody, you can bind that person with that rope. But now suppose you put fire to that rope. Now, even after the rope is burnt, you will be able to see those twinings on it. And those threads will be seen. And yet, will you be able to use that rope to bind anybody? In appearance, it is still like a rope. But it doesn't have any capacity to bind anybody. So similarly, the works of this person appear like work, but one very important ingredient that makes our work binding is absent from those works, and that ingredient is this ego, I am the doer, is absent, and therefore it is actually no work, and therefore does not bind. Samagram praviliyate, all these actions of this person are completely gone. They are not there at all. Next verse shows the awareness, underlying basic awareness of this person. That sense of complete, total oneness is seen. This is not a matter of, it is told, that this is not just a matter of arranging things in our mind. It is seeing the truth, that of oneness. When you are aware of that oneness, automatically your actions will be like that. And therefore, to describe that, this verse is the 24th verse, very famous verse. It is chanted by literally hundreds of thousands of people in India very often. Brahmarpanam brahma have brahmagnam brahmanahutam ब्रह्मैव तेन गन्तव्यं ब्रह्म कर्म समाधिना. Do you know this verse, Triveni? Do you ever chant this? You don't know this verse? Oh, wow! I thought that you must be knowing this verse. This Brahmarpanam Brahma have we never chanted? Okay. This is, it is chanted as when you take food, before taking the food. In India, there is a practice of chanting this verse as grace. You know, as you say, one says grace before eating, and this verse is chanted because this converts our action of eating into the action of yajna, sacrifice. Eating then becomes a sacrifice. What is happening in any action, as I told in the beginning, the things are put from one place and kept in, put in some other pot, some other place. Like the example of constructing a building, or going from one place to another place, or say the act of eating. What is happening? There is food in one pot. Now, it is taken up and put in the other pot called belly. It is just the place is changed, you know. The form also gets changed. The hand is like the hand that lifts it. Like a spoon, it lifts. The hand is like that spoon. All these are seen as different parts, different aspects of the same one reality. A great saint, Jnaneshwar, has given a beautiful analogy to describe this. That suppose there is a nice carving in stone, that it is shown there in that carving that somebody is doing worship. Now in the worship there are those some instruments, some utensils of worship, like tomorrow the brown students, Hindu Brahmins group, they will be doing Durga Puja. So this afternoon, yesterday too, I was looking at the different arrangements, the utensils are there or not, the other ingredients are there or not. So all those ingredients also are carved in stone there. The worshipper is also sitting and doing something. The picture that is also carved. The deity to be worshipped, that is also carved. Now, imagine that the stone is conscious and alive. The stone on which it is carved, that is a conscious, alive stone. Now, what will be the awareness of the stone? The worshipper is also the same stone. The utensils of worship, they are also the same one stone. The deity is also the same stone. That which is, you know, offered to the deity, that is also the same stone. The act of offering is also the same one stone. So that is this verse. The ladle is Brahman. That yajna is pictured here, that in yajna there is fire. A sacrificial fire is lit. And in that sacrificial fire, some fuel like butter or clarified butter is poured. A ladle is used for that. And somebody is doing that action, and there is a result of that action. So it is said that the ladle is the same reality Brahman, all pervading one reality, that ladle is Brahman. Then the oblation is Brahman, what is being poured, that is Brahman. It is offered by Brahman, the one who is offering, and that also is carved in that, it is just a shape in that. That is also the same one reality. And the fire is also the same Brahman. The Brahman alone he attains. And what one attains by that sacrifice, that also is the same reality. So, with every action, if we associate this attitude, then that action will lead us to this knowledge. Why it is specifically done at the time of taking food is, when one is about to take food, there is a predominant, very strong awareness that I am the enjoyer and that the food is enjoyed. That duality, that distinction of subject-object is very strong at that time. I am the eater and that is going to be eaten. Wow, I love this. I don't like this. All that subject-object attitude is tremendously predominant at that time. And therefore to smother it, to bring an illumination at that time, one has to recite this verse. It is not in the just a mechanical something, but one has to see that this is the meaning, that idea of oneness, that this eater and that eaten, they are just the manifestations of the same reality. It is one reality that is appearing as the eater and also as eaten, and also the act of eating. See what a great difference it will bring in this act of eating. So that is why this is associated with that. But this is the awareness of the knower of the truth about all actions. So next verse will again, after showing this, this is the ultimate goal or the ultimate awareness. Now one walks to that awareness, one gradually marches to that ultimate awareness from according to one's strength, one's tendencies, one's constitution. There will be differences in that. So they will be discussed that according to wherever we are, whatever stage we are in, we can practice this truth. And nobody should be considered, hey, this fellow is useless, can never do that. No, everybody has a right. And this Bhagavad Gita accepts everyone. Yes, come, you can practice. But does not keep us as we are. It accepts us as we are, but does not keep us as we are. Like a staircase, it accepts us at the lowest level, whatever level we are, it accepts us, but does not keep us there. It tells us, hey, move on, move on. So this is what will be illustrated from the next verse, and we will try to see that in our next class. Any questions? Yes, Charles?
Is it correct to say that work in the secular world goes from the simple to the complex, whereas gaining spiritual knowledge is going from the complex to the simple?
Oh, yeah, you can put it like that. Yeah. As you progress, things start becoming more and more simplified for one. But yeah, but that process involves complexity. Yeah. Right. Yes, Ulu?
I was wondering in the idea of, I see a letting go of the fruits of the work, say in the secular world, one, I guess, subtle trap that I think I fall into is kind of seeing myself and desiring realization. And so I feel that in a certain way I'm looking for that result. So how to work with that desire and
good. Yeah, this question we have discussed a few times, and that desire is allowed. And that desire is excellent. That desire actually has just the name desire. It is because of not having any other name, we are calling that also desire. But if you look at closely, it is not really a desire. Because your desire essentially is that of renouncing all desires. So it is only a question of, you know, play on words. It is really not a desire. Give it some other name and it will be fine. Because in content, in essence, it is not desire. Somebody asked this question to Sri Ramakrishna, and then he also therefore told that the desire to experience God cannot be counted as desire. Somebody is told not to eat sweets. But then the fellow was told to take a medicine and with a little sugar candy. The Ayurvedic medicine usually go with a little sugar candy or honey. But he said that is allowed because that is a medication. That is not to be counted among the sweets. But if you try to eat it again as sweet, that is a problem. The desire for God realization should not be counted amongst the desires. You two have a question, my goodness.
What is the translation, the exact translation of the famous verse?
Did I not read it?
In pieces, but how is it?
Okay. The ladle is Brahman, the oblation is Brahman. It is offered by the Brahman in the fire, which is Brahman. Brahman alone he attains who sees Brahman in action.